You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I don't kiss men.
The Wire.
But I kissed him.
No mai hoki mai anō. Welcome back to The Wire on 95BFM. Once again, if you have any thoughts on any of the pieces we've played today, please give us a text on 5395 or call us in the studio on 309-3879. We appreciate the feedback, whether it's good or bad. In the lead-up to the U.S. presidential elections, one of Donald Trump's key campaign promises was to broker a truce between Russia and Ukraine within 24 hours, dubbing himself the President of Peace. Almost 7 months into Trump's presidency and more than 3 years since Russia began its invasion of Ukraine, the war has only continued to escalate and no peace or ceasefire deals have been achieved yet. However, hopes for a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine have been reignited for some following the announcement of talks between Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin that will take place this Friday. However, there have been some concerns surrounding those same talks, noting that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and other EU leaders haven't been invited, with Russia insisting on holding on to its territorial gains as part of any ceasefire negotiations. I speak to Stefan Hoadley, a retired associate professor of international relations at the University of Auckland, to discuss the upcoming talks between Russia and Putin to negotiate a ceasefire in Russia's war on Ukraine. Can you give us a rundown on the main focus of the upcoming talks between Trump and Putin?
Putin wants to keep the territory that he's achieved by military aggression. Trump wants to stop the fighting altogether so that he can appeal to the Nobel Committee for a peace prize. It's an impasse in the sense that the two sides are incompatible, and also that the Ukrainian view is not being taken into account. The Ukrainians apparently are not going to be at the peace talks. Well, the ceasefire talks, I think, is more accurate. There's not going to be a peace, but maybe there'll be a ceasefire. And the Europeans are not going to be there either. The Europeans, of course, are on the front line and want to be involved in the discussions. So it's an awkward situation, Otto.
So what conditions will Putin likely be laying out for him to accept a ceasefire deal?
Putin wants to keep what he has achieved on the battlefield. He has partially occupied 4 provinces and completely occupied Crimea. So there are 5 entities or 5 portions of southeastern Ukraine that has Russian troops on it. And Putin wants to legitimize this and annex those portions into the Russian Federation. He wants also, in his dreams, he wants Ukraine to surrender the last bits of Donetsk and Luhansk to Russian forces. They're still held partially by Ukrainian forces. And in his dream of dreams, he wants the Ukrainian government to capitulate and for Ukraine to become neutralized, disarmed, pledge never to join NATO, and to become, in effect, like Belarus, a satellite of Russia. So Putin has big dreams, and these run directly contrary to the nationalistic, patriotic sentiments of the Ukrainians, who regard themselves as quite separate from the Russians and quite willing to fight to retain their independence.
With Zelensky and other EU leaders being excluded from these talks, what outcomes do you expect to be brought for the Ukrainian side?
I expect there'll be a lot of hyperbole, a lot of rhetoric. Putin and Trump will both claim victory in the discussion. There will be very little substance, and Ukraine will complain that their views have not been taken into account, and the Europeans likewise will complain that their views have not been taken into account, since the Europeans are on the front line next to Ukraine and are, in effect, holding Russia back from further expansion. So I'm pessimistic that the talks will accomplish anything. It is possible that there could be a very temporary ceasefire with the Russians and the Ukrainian forces remaining in place along the current line of contact, and that a exchange of prisoners could take place. Perhaps there could be other kinds of temporary settlement, but the Ukrainian intelligence agencies are telling us that the Russian forces are not preparing to stand down and take a rest. They're, in fact, redeploying, moving around in such a way that indicates an offensive operation that will begin before too long. Putin has certainly not conceded that Ukraine is an illegitimate entity, that it really should be under Russian control. The Ukrainians have not budged from their position that they want to cede no territory. The latest news, by the way, Otto, is that the Ukrainians apparently have said, look, we possibly can cede de facto control to the Russians of those five provinces, the four provinces plus Crimea, in return for a ceasefire. That is de facto, not de jure, not legal. So Ukraine would continue to claim the right to take back those provinces, but in the meantime, they would stand their troops down and not challenge Russian control over those portions of the five provinces that Russia now occupies. This would be the price they'd be willing to pay for a ceasefire to stop those nightly waves of drones and missiles that are bombarding the residential areas of Ukrainian cities. So there is a possibility of a temporary ceasefire, one which would freeze the current military position in place, but which would not solve the underlying dilemma, the underlying conflicting views of the two principal parties, Russia and Ukraine.
Should these talks result in a ceasefire deal, how likely is it that Ukraine might consider the terms of that deal to be unacceptable or unreasonable?
As long as there are Russians still in Ukrainian territory, the Ukrainians, particularly Zelensky, assuming he remains the president, and there has been some rumors that he might be replaced and sometime in the future, and a more accommodating president might make concessions. But let's assume that Zelensky remains in place. He will continue to argue as long as there is one Russian soldier on Ukrainian soil. Ukraine will continue to protest that in a legal sense. Now, militarily, Ukraine is at a disadvantage. They're one-third the population of Russia. They depend on American arms, particularly air defense missiles, artillery shells, and other essential things for the day-to-day combat. And Donald Trump is, of course, vacillating and indicating he's willing to compromise. Somehow he sees Putin's point of view. And so the Ukrainians are in an awkward position that they've got to make sure that Trump continues the flow of essential weapons so that Ukrainians can continue to hold off the Russians. So their challenge is not just military, but it's also political. It involves the ego of Donald Trump. And this makes a multi-variable problem for Zelensky, not just a simple military problem.
So aside from boosting Trump's ego and possibly achieving a Nobel Peace Prize, is there anything else that the American side is looking to get from these talks?
Well, yeah, the American side is divided. I think the American military, they'd like to see this cease because they want to keep the weapons themselves. The United States arsenals are being gradually run down as weapons are sent to Ukraine. I should add, these are old weapons. The United States keeps its newest and best and sends along its near obsolescent weapons to Ukraine, which is still quite useful. And the military are concerned that this conflict continue and this drain on American military resources, which should be directed to balancing China in Asia, should stop. Trump wants instant gratification of instant peace so he can claim victory and fulfill his campaign promises. The Republican base, the alt-right supporters of Trump, they want no more wars. They don't want the United States to do anything abroad. Not war, not economic aid. They want trade only on American terms. Quite unreasonable in vis-a-vis the previous decades of globalization. They want to reverse globalization and go back to great power nationalization. So there are many different currents swirling in Washington, pulling in different ways, but it's very unfortunate in the sense that the United States and Russia, the United States and Europe, that are natural allies, are now drawing apart are diverging because the Europeans are quite committed that they need to stop Russia where they stand, because the Europeans will be next victims of Russian aggression. And the United States, safe behind the Atlantic Ocean and concerned maybe more with China than with Europe, seems to be under Trump vacillating and may not be a stalwart partner in NATO, may not continue to send essential weapons to Ukraine if the Ukrainian president isn't very polite to Donald Trump, the individual, and that this is undermining the Western solidarity, the Western consensus of globalization, peace, prosperity, and the humanitarian welfare for all.
And do you think that Trump might take any punitive measures towards Russia if Putin refuses to make concessions to achieve a ceasefire?
Well, I sincerely hope so. From time to time, Trump says he's pissed off with Putin. I wish he would continue to be irritated because he wants peace and Russia continue to bomb Ukraine. And it is the Russians who are perpetrating the war. The Ukrainians would be quite happy to stop fighting if the Russians stop bombing and stop probing in the southeastern military lines of contact. And Trump should be irritated because he should realize, and maybe his more adult advisors are telling him exactly that. Whether he's listening or not, we don't know, probably not. But the advisors will be saying, look, Putin is the bad guy here. Pat Putin is the aggressive. Ukraine is the victim. And we should support the victim and stabilize the battle lines and protect Western Europe, particularly Poland, the Baltic states, Romania, Moldova, because if Russia captures Ukraine, then the other countries of Europe, particularly NATO countries, might suffer military pressure or hybrid warfare or subversion or even military attack by Russia in the future. And as I said, World War II indicated Hitler could have been stopped by a small show of defiance early on, but once Hitler got up momentum, it took a major war to stop the Nazis. And so maybe we're at one of these turning points where we should stand firm and exert some energy and some resources and some political will to stop Russia where it is now, because if we don't stop Russia now, then there'll be a bigger war needed to be fought in the future.
And that was Stefan Hoadley, a retired associate professor of international relations at the University of Auckland, talking to us about the upcoming talks between Trump and Putin to negotiate a ceasefire in Russia's war on Ukraine.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.